Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show. Stephanie Lowe, aka Science Steph with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists.
Hello, hello, you guys. Welcome to the Dope Science Show. This is Science Steph with Steph, and my good friend, my virtual friend, who's really my friend, Danny's on the show, and we're going to talk about his podcast and science and what we liked about Black Panther. So I'm going to let Danny introduce himself. Hey, what's up, Danny? Hey.
Peace, Steph. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm awesome. I just turned 45 yesterday, so I had a great birthday.
Oh. Happy birthday. I didn't know that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And just to let you know, everybody online knows me as Dan Trezomi. I am an educator. I don't teach social justice anymore. I used to actually help build the curriculum with a co-teacher on social justice here in Ohio, and I taught that for about a year and a half in the middle school. But I'm still an educator. But I don't teach that curriculum anymore. I got a promotion and moved on. But also, I am a capoeirista. I teach capoeira. I am still a b-boy, what some of y'all know as a breakdancer. I am a writer and most recently a podcaster, and my show is called Where My Killer Tape At. It's really, I like to call it old foginess because it's really what we, I'm an old fogey on there complaining and ranting, and I really try to talk about 90s, you know, hip-hop culture, 90s culture, pop culture, all that. So I try to do that, but like most podcasts, I end up doing just talking about pop culture, so...
No, but you do it too. Like, I know if I want to do some homework on hip-hop and just, like, the truth behind any topic, like Black Panther or something, it's not only that you talk about it, you go super in-depth with it, like with dates. And I'm like, whoa, okay. Everything's cited.
Thank you, Stephanie. That means a lot. And I'm glad you consider me a friend, like, outside of, because we met online. And I really appreciate that. Thank you so much because you've helped me out so much when it comes to my podcast. And just regular everyday stuff helped me out so much. So I really appreciate you.
Thanks. I could say the same. I know our audience is like, all right, they love each other. Yes, yes, yes. And that's okay, right? I want everyone to know where can they find your podcast, though?
I'm on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and SoundCloud. And I keep saying iTunes. It's Apple. It's Apple Podcast. They don't call it iTunes anymore. You have iTunes, but Apple Podcast is like now a separate app and everything. It's crazy. So Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and SoundCloud. And I put the old episodes up on YouTube, so you can find them on YouTube.
Oh, cool! And it's Where My Killer Tape At. You
yep,
say it better.
Killer is pronounced K-I-L-L-A.
Yes. Awesome, you guys, check it out. He really, I shared it, but I don't know if you guys saw it, but he did an episode on his podcast where he went behind into the history behind, like, vibranium and science on, like, Black Panther. That was a really good episode. You guys should check that out.
Oh, thank you.
Definitely. So what did you think about Black Panther?
I loved it. Just, it was everything I had imagined. It exceeded my expectations, like it really did. Like, for example, spoiler alert, I didn't know they were going to kill Claw so early in the film. Like, I didn't see that coming. And but it just exceeded my expectations. Like, I'd never liked Killmonger as a villain. I felt like he was a villain that wasn't worthy of T'Challa, but the movie really made him, Ryan Coogler fixed the Marvel problem, which was Marvel just had these one-dimensional villains. Mm-hmm. Which you really couldn't get into, and he fixed it. So it just exceeded my expectations. It was just amazing. I can watch it over and over again. I watched it 3 times, and I'm going to see it again. 3 times. So.
Oh, I've only seen it once. Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to go see it again. But I'm broke. But
We actually hosted a showing. So we did last Saturday. We did a martial arts demo. We had all these black martial artists in one room. We did all these demos, and we had this panel discussion. Then I did a workshop, and then we took everybody to see Black Panther. So it was really, it was just a dope event.
Wow. Were mm-hmm. So what age were the kids?
Yeah, they were ranging between, because some of my students came from my job, but so I'm going to say from 6 to all the way to, 18.
Hmm.
So, yeah. And then, my sons performed, so they, they performed, and their fellow students performed, so those kids are between the ages of 11, so actually 8 and 16, so that was that range. So we pretty much brought everybody with us. Actually, I think there was 2 babies in there, too, if I remember correctly.
That's so funny. I could just see that, you guys all showing up together. What did you think? Did you feel like the kids were as hyped as you were when you watched it? Like, you see online all these think pieces about, exposing children to STEM and the impact of them seeing themselves. Did you see that in real life?
Yes, I did. I saw that a lot. And being a comic book fan, and then, because what happens is you always like characters that most people don't know. And mm-hmm. Black Panther was virtually unknown to most people, mm-hmm. not just black people, to most people up until he showed up in Captain America: Civil War, and then everybody was on it. So I thought that was really dope that a lot of people are latching onto this character. It's funny, I went because I had to get some old issues, some back issues of Black Panther that I was missing because I fell behind, and mm-hmm. I went to the store and they were like, I know what you want, all the comic book store owners, they're like, I know what you want, we don't have. And I'm like, that's good. I'm not mad. I got to order it online, but that's good. I'm glad that people are buying those, because last year Roxane Gay wrote World of Wakanda, which was an amazing series. Highly recommend it. And they canceled it because it wasn't selling enough. So, and then Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote Black Panther and the Crew, which had Misty Knight, Luke Cage, Storm, and Edie Fessy, one of my favorite characters, and T'Challa in it. And they canceled that too, so they only had 6 issues. So you can buy those in trades now. You can buy those in the trade paperback. It's probably cheaper.
I don't know where I started. I think I started with Coates first, Ta-Nehisi Coates edition, and I have 3, and then I haven't bought any in a while. So you're saying there's only 3 more?
No, because that one is doing really well. That Black Panther that he did that issue. That's doing really well, even before the movie. That was the one. I think it broke a record where I think that comic book series broke a record, because usually what happens is when issue number 1 comes out, they usually sell hot for any mm-hmm. comic book. And then the second issue gets released and the sales drop dramatically. But what happened with the first issue, they had to do like 3 or 4 more runs because it kept selling out. And the same thing happened to issue number 2. They had to do more runs. And I think it broke the record of, it had fewer sales than the first one, but it wasn't like exponentially.
I see.
It's not rare for a comic book issue number 1 to come out and sell 80,000 copies and an issue 2 come out and it sells 15,000 copies. That's actually not, it happens quite often. So I think that's like one of the few comics in a long time that's done it, that didn't drop that badly. So it's doing well, but the Roxane Gay series didn't do well at all, even though it's a great story to throw on the logic. It's a wonderful story. And that one didn't do too well. And it was just great. But you can buy that in the trade. It's called World of Wakanda.
Okay. Oh, you should give me a list of like all the Black Panther like stories, because I'm not a comic book person. The only comic books that I ever read were like Tales from the Crypt back in the day,
okay.
and like mad TV comic books, just like random stuff my mom
yourself.
Had. I know, I don't mind, I'm old. Oh, and Night of the Living Dead, maybe? I'm not sure. But I remember reading like horror comic books back in the day when I was a kid. Black Panther was my first one that that got me into actually ordering like comic books and looking forward to it. So, yeah, I would definitely like a list of, like, hey, you should get these. That would be awesome. And
okay, I can do that. I can definitely do that.
Yes, you can. And thank you, because I know you'll, like, do it. So I could count on you. And you're like, I've got citations. I've got this. I've been waiting my whole life. when I was watching it, the only Black Panther story I have read is Ta-Nehisi Coates' version. And so that one's all about, like, the rebels and T'Challa being, like, torn between having to be a bit of a tyrant, like, he can't
yes.
be
yes.
free and just make decisions that is like he has to be the king, and that's when you see him like be not necessarily a good guy, you know. And
that's kind of like, and that's addressed in the movie, you know.
I feel like that. I think it like foreshadows it in the movie, but it goes much more in depth in the comics books because you really feel more so for the rebels, you know.
Yes. And the Dora Milaje.
What did you say?
And the Dora Milaje.
Oh yes, so, yes.
You feel them as well.
Yes.
So,
I wonder
Anika
if...
and Ayo.
What did you say?
Anika and Ayo.
Isn't it funny when you say these things? I'm like, what are these foreign? My ears are like, what? Oh, okay, guess. Because I have never heard it out loud. I've only seen it in print, their names. So hearing it, I'm like, oh, okay, that's what he's saying.
I'm sorry, I should have gave you more context.
No, it's okay. I know what you mean. But maybe you could tell everyone listening. Maybe they don't. I bet a lot of people don't know.
Well, there's two Dora Milaje, Anika and Ayo, in the Ta-Nehisi Coates series. They defect, and they actually help lead a rebellion against T'Challa. And that's why the World of Wakanda stories are good, because they actually show you why they defected. And if you notice in the Ta-Nehisi series, he's not actually rolling with the Dora Milaje. He's rolling with the War Dogs. And so at first I was like, well, what happened? And that's World of Wakanda. They explain why the Dora Milaje is no longer working with Ta-Nehisi. They're back with T'Challa. They're back together with him now. But if you get the first 12 issues of that Nation Under Our Feet storyline that he was doing, then you'll see why they left him and then they came back. So it's real interesting. The two main Dora Milaje is Ayo, who was actually in the movie. She was in Civil War and in Black Panther.
What does she look like in Black Panther?
If you remember Civil War, she told the Black Widow, move or you will be moved.
I never saw that.
Yeah, well, you got to see it because she's in it. She works with the Black Widow. Black Widow stands in front of her. She goes, move or you will be moved. and then she shows up. And I don't know if you remember the last fight scene in the third act where Okoye says to the one Dora Milaje, she goes, Ayo, go help T'Challa. And they all say, oh, uh-huh. Help T'Challa, and the rest of them stay to fight Killmonger. The one, when he said Ayo, she looked at her. So you can see her head snap. She's like, go save T'Challa. And then go help T'Challa. And they went over. So that was Ayo.
I'm like, I still don't know who that one is. What does she look like? What does she look like?
She's dark skinned and bald headed. I'm not.
Okay. She's not Danai, right?
No, she's not Danai. Danai is Okoye.
Okay.
And Lupita is the king.
Oh, are you talking about the really tall girl who looks really fierce?
She's gorgeous. She's just gorgeous.
And she's beautiful and she's bald.
Yeah, she has high cheekbones.
And they almost cut her neck, or they did cut her neck, and she was like...
No, she survived because in the last scene, when he goes in front of the after-credit scene, when he goes in front of, like, the United Nations,
uh-huh.
And the one girl that's with them, that's with Nakia and Okoye and T'Challa, that's her.
Oh, okay, yes, I know her. Yes, she's, like, unforgettable. Yes, I know her. She's really good. She's really good. I've seen her in other stuff recently, and she's just, like, so fierce, like, in everything. Like, that is her character. She's been typecast already.
Yeah, she's already been typecast,
But it's okay.
I highly recommend Ta-Nehisi Coates' run on Black Panther if you want to jump in. You can actually, I recommend anybody, next week on Wednesday, they're releasing Black Panther number one. And it shows how Wakandans have actually colonized the planet, and they called it Bas. They named it after the panther goddess. So they, a couple of years ago, they launched a space program, Wakanda, and this issue is going to explore, you know, the planet, the new planet they founded, and they've helped the civilization that lives there. They helped them, like, come up. So it's, I can't wait to read it. It comes out Wednesday, so everybody
wow.
Check it out.
So, yeah. You're saying Wakanda... Because a space program, and then they help another planet?
Yeah, they find another planet, and they found some people that lived there, and they were like, I don't want to say backwards. That sounds so imperialistic, but they weren't as technologically advanced as the Wakandans, so the Wakandans helped them, you know.
Mm.
But they named the planet Bast, so it's their planet.
Huh. It'll be interesting what they do with it, what Marvel does with
Black Exactly, Panther. Exactly. Yep.
There's so much it could do.
Yep.
You know?
So I'm really excited. I can't wait.
Me too. That sounds awesome. What about the science in Black Panther? What did you think about that? Like, Shuri, what was your favorite thing?
I think, you know what? Maybe I'm tripping, but the fact that they have, because we have that technology, that light rail technology.
Right.
I mean, not light rail, I'm sorry, maglev. They have that. We have that maglev technology. We're just not good with it. Right? Because I've seen some colleges and universities that have maglev, and it's always breaking down. They always have issues with it. And I know it's, like, expensive to maintain. So I thought that was cool that Everett Ross was like, oh, my God, like, you guys are using magnets, right? And she,
right.
She was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was like, man, I've never used this. I've never seen it used so efficiently. And I was like, oh, my God, he's so right. You know, so, like,
yeah.
I've been to, like, I remember when my alma mater, Old Dominion University, they got a maglev. They got like, donated to them. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to ride. They said, we're going to open it up on this day. And I remember going, and they were like, oh, we're having technical problems. And I'm like, what? You know, that's the first
yeah.
day. So, like, it's always breaking down. And I thought it was just them. But other mm-hmm. people have problems having, you know, using magnets to move stuff. And so I thought that was really dope.
When you say magnets to move stuff, like, they're basically using, like, the opposite forces in order to, like,
I don't know how it actually operates, but I know it uses that function,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's supposed to
like that
use,
push
like, no
function.
Energy. Yeah, so it moves slow, not slow, but it can't go as fast as like a light rail.
Mm-hmm.
But it uses like very minimum energy, you know. It's very minimum. No, energy.
I noticed in the film, which I thought was super cool, is like the technology. I guess it was, but I felt like it wasn't so far-fetched. Like, I seemed like they were, except for the teleportation, that was pretty, you know, advanced. But
yeah.
I mean, like, it seemed as if they're so, like, you know, you can see some of those things. You can imagine seeing them within, like, 10, 20 years, some of the things that we saw in the movie.
No, I agree. I agree. With the exception of his suit, that's the only thing that I can see everything else actually happen in 10, 20 years. So,
why not
but,
the suit? Like, I feel like I was reading something about that because we have all these wearable, like, tech, and they do have materials that are able to, like, absorb, you know, use your body's kinetic energy and, like, store it as a energy source and as well as being able to store, like, impact, you know, from walking and things like that. It's kind of like his vibranium. Maybe not to, like, that efficiency, but I don't feel like it's that far-fetched.
No, because remember that it's nanites. And he can control the nanites with his mind. Because we can use nanites to do a lot of stuff, but we have to program it.
And what is minites? What is that?
Nanites. And they're like microscopic. It's literally microscopic CPUs. We have that technology. Those are microscopic. We can actually program them. They're programming now to like help people that have cancer, right? Because they're microscopic, right? So
right.
You have to program them. You have to say, okay, you have to program this nanite to rebuild this cell. You have to program. It's like a computer. You got to program it.
Right.
But the nanite he had. He controlled it with his mind and told it what to do. He didn't have to speak it.
Oh.
So how do you get – now you have to wire your brain. I don't know what they're doing. Because if we were to do that today, we would have to actually go into somebody's head and surgically install technology that will have you send that information outside. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I do know they use
– so,
They have some technology where you can think things and have robots do the actions.
Yeah, but they do have that, but they have to surgically install the hardware.
Oh, like brain implants.
They would have to do that. And I don't think I don't, I'm not saying they don't have it. They don't have it in the comic book, but they, I don't think the Wakandans did that.
Oh, I see. I see.
See what I'm saying? So now they had, she gave him that thing they put behind their ears. That's what he used to communicate with the nanites, right? So,
right.
You know, so how do you get it to where I can mentally tell the nanites, turn into this vibranium suit?
Oh, I see.
And then, you see what I'm saying? So, like, we do have, I've seen, you know, in the military, I've seen, there's this thing called the, this is just the name they give it, but it's called the Batman suit.
Uh-huh.
And it's like an exoskeleton. It allows her to run. It allows the person to run faster and jump higher and punch harder. You know, so they're working on that. That's technology. It's not already out. They're still working on that, but it's like right around the corner. You know, so, but they literally have like a Batman suit, and you just put it on, and it allows you to go. It's like an exoskeleton. So that's available. That is. But the situation with him telling the nanites to turn into a vibranium suit and turn off, you know.
How do you feel about, like, humans using suits and, like what is your line between biohacking? Like, at what point do you consider, like, we've gone too far? Like, wearing a suit that's, like, a robotic suit that you control of your mind, is that not too far versus, like, implanting, you know, a gun into your arm or something like that?
I think the technology, the only thing that sucks about our society and what I love about Wakanda is that the military is what pushes the limits of science, right? When you look at all of our advances in the last 30 to 40 years, they came from the military. Everything from Velcro to, even when you see people, like, you know how you see hospitals, they have helipads so they can transport people, and that all came from the military. That's all military stuff. So I think that when we use it to kill, I think that's when we're going overboard. Because just think about it. If we gave firefighters exoskeletons, right?
Mm-hmm.
The people they can save, you know, the people they can save. They can move faster. They can go into a room. They can punch down a wall and save people. You know, they can grab people, and if they got to jump out of a window, they can jump out of a window and not be hurt. Like, that's amazing.
Right.
You know, people get, you know, you have like an earthquake, and you can use these exoskeletons to move stuff and get to people faster. It's just, we just be able to, this is, you can just use them for all kinds of things when it comes to, like, rescue. It will be amazing to do that stuff, right? So construction, it will help with construction. Like, just across the board, I think it's amazing that we have this technology or getting there. But when we start using it to kill, I think that's when we've gone overboard.
I think so, too. So you're saying, but it's funny because you're like, it's like a violent thing is what you're saying. It's inspiring attack, but then you're saying don't use it for violence.
Exactly. I mean, if you see these military budgets, man, oh, it's astronomical. And most of our R&D is done in the military. You know, it's all like, you know, the reason why LASIK surgery, one of the reasons why LASIK surgery is cheaper now is because the military uses it all the time, right, for their soldiers and stuff like that. So it's more, you know, they got more technology now, so it's more efficient, so it's much more cheaper to do. And that's why I remember when it first came out, laser technology was super expensive. But now you can even do a payment plan, you know. So it's just the military really drives, you know, in our society. I can't speak for anybody else, but in our society, military drives technology, you know.
Yeah, I can't say that's not true, but maybe it's just like, you know, the type of technology. Like, for instance, pharmaceuticals drive medicine, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, so it's not necessarily, when we say that, so we're thinking it's almost like you're saying industry drives it, right? Because it's like wherever, it's not just the military. The military is the biggest investor, I would say, but you see medical advances, and those are driven by pharmaceutical industry, right? And then you see, like, a lot of new tech that comes, and it's driven by, like, the gig economy and so on, like, and that's driven by, you know, tech. Like, there's so many new things. I wonder, though, are apps considered inventions? Like,
that's a good question. I guess I look at inventions as, like, there's a necessity for it, and then you create something to fill that need, that's an invention.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's kind of like, then that's like saying, that'll be like, you know, so if somebody invented the wheel and then I invented the bicycle wheel, you know, I think that's a new innovation. It's a new innovation, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I could have used the stone wheel or whatever.
But you couldn't say you
one,
invented the wheel.
But I invented the bicycle wheel.
Exactly, but you wouldn't be able to say, right. I invented the wheel, right?
Yeah, I invented the bicycle. Yeah, you're right. You made a good point.
I don't know. I'm just
in
the sun on my Sunday, like, I wonder, do you think in your lifetime, I follow someone on Instagram, and I tried to get him to go on my show, and he said he wasn't ready, so
okay.
Maybe he will one day. He's into biohacking, and there's so many ethical questions that come to mind. Like, and I am biased because my first thought is always, this is a little evil. I know it's going to be evil. Like, that's my first, like, thought. Like, somehow this is going to end up into some perversion. And why do I think that? You know, like you said, it could be something could be good. Like, say, for instance, you're blind. And you need to get this surgery for your eyes, and you're not able to get it. But with biohacking, they have the perspective, the way the community I'm thinking of, they experiment on themselves. Like, they're like, we won't use the system. We'll just get it done. So I can see it being like, weird, you know, hotel rooms where people were trying to figure out how to, like, hack into the eyes.
But, you know, that happens today with, you know, plastic surgery. You know, I mean, I'm not saying it's good.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that
that's
it happens. And I think the question is that we have to ask is, you know, when these technologies come out, who usually gets access to them first? And it's usually people that are very wealthy.
Right.
And I know people all the time who have, you know, chronic illnesses, or they have, you know, cancer, and they just can't afford certain, you know, access to technology, and it's just, that's what happens. So what about those people, right? There are people who've died because they didn't have access to, you know, particular things they needed to get surgery, so I don't have an issue with it. There's an issue with ethics, you know, experimenting on people, but, you know, Christopher, you know, one thing I admire about Christopher Reeve, but then again, he had the money, was he always tried new experiments to try to help him.
Oh, yeah,
better.
I remember that.
And most of them, all of them failed, like every one of them failed, you know, but he had access to that money. He had that money to do that, but most of us don't. But,
right.
You know, so we're going to do what we have to do, especially if we have the expertise, right?
Yes.
And this is where I was talking about earlier about the military, like, they will invest. If there's some military applications to the technology you're trying to do, they are going to invest. They do. I've seen them do it. And it's like, where else are you going to get the money for it? Because everybody else is like, I don't know. You know? So.
That's true. And with the people who advocate for biohacking, it's the same train of thought where they're like, hey, it's always the rich people who have access to this, you know, this new technology.
Yep.
And if you have the expertise and the know-how, they believe in, if you want to experiment on yourself, to do it. Just do it, you know. And I could definitely see that being the case as far as it, like you said, like people do with like plastic surgery. I would still would prefer you can go to like an actual doctor and get it done.
Yeah,
but
I agree. I agree 100%. Yeah.
But if it's life saving, like someone's going to give you new stem cells that are going to help you like fight your cancer, and it's just a shot, you know, like I could totally see people doing that or going for it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you watch Altered Carbon?
Yeah, I loved it. I'm so glad I could say yes.
And it deals with that very subject, right? There are some people who can purchase new bodies for their loved ones after they die.
Exactly.
Right? And then there's some people who cannot. And in the first episode, you see old lady come out of the room, and they're like, she's like, Mom, Dad. And they're like, wait a second, where's my little girl at? You know, and they're like, that's what you paid for, you know, and that's what you get. And it's just like, wow. It's, I mean, like, really? That's, I mean, the customer service sucked, first of all, but it's like, it's just, like,
they don't,
you know,
they're like, we don't need customer service. There's not much competition.
So, but that it deals with that general issue, like, who has access? Who can, you know, who's going to get this? And, you know, the rich, of course, get to live to be thousands of years, you know, and poor people do not, you know.
It's so true. I love that show. It's so dark, though. It's so good, but
it's
so
dark.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It makes you hate humanity even more. You're just like, oh! You're like, oh! You know, so. But anyway, back to Black Panther. Any other, yeah, other questions about Black Panther?
Do I have any more questions about Black Panther? Not that I can think of. Oh, yes, yes. I mean, I can talk about that feeling I loved watching it. I wanted to go to Baldwin Hills, which is like a Black community in L.A., and they have the Crenshaw Mall, which is like the big mall in the Black community. And so I was like, I want to take my daughter to go see Black Panther there. We didn't make it, but I was looking for that experience of watching it with Black people. And the reason why is because when I was sitting there, it was just like I had hoped for but didn't know. And what was one of the best parts were those inside Black things, like watching it and recognizing like authentic, like community knowledge, like be exposed like I've never seen before, like talking about colonizers on like a big screen like that. That's not something that Black people usually talk about in mixed company with people.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
There were a lot of those things, just like things that we would pick up, like why there's the tension between the African American community and the African community, and just like little things, you know, that is like we know it, but it's like we never talk about this in a public space. I had that same feeling with Get Out. That's how I felt about Black Panther.
Did you see Get Out in the theater?
Yes.
And I got that experience of being around Black people and just like having that those different reactions. It was very communal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always tell people, because Get Out has just been re-released in the movie theater, I always tell people, go see it in the theater because you got to get that experience. You're not going to get that experience watching it on DVD. So, but I had a chance to actually go with my community to watch Black Panther, and it was just like, the only thing I can describe it is like church. It was just like church. It was very communal. You know, we were all in there. We clapped at the right parts. We laughed at the right parts. You know, we got involved. Like, you know, like, and then afterward, you know, everybody was clapping, excited. And I thought, but for me, it was dope because I was with my family. My Gapora students, and then my students from work. So it was like, and then people in my community that I work with. So it was really very communal, and we just enjoyed it tremendously. And that was my third time watching it. I just enjoyed it so much. So I recommend going with, I tell people, if you're going to go with a group of people you know, or go with, like, if you're part of a club or, you know, soror or fraternity or church, I recommend you going with them. So that way you get that full experience that, and then you can hang out and talk about it. So,
yeah, it's just like, and what was I thinking of? Sorry, my dog interrupted me. I was thinking, it's just like when that community feeling, I lost my train of thought. I don't know. Sorry. Well, let me let the dog do what he wants to do. I was going to say, and let me know. I don't know what your time's like. I'm just talking.
No,
but
definitely, I got you.
I was going to say, I was reading. Did you watch the Olympics?
I did not.
Okay, me either. But I did watch I didn't watch it this year. I think it's because, you know, no one watches regular TV anymore. So that whole experience of, the Olympics is on, like, you don't really have that unless you seek it out, you know?
Yeah.
And but I did watch the Olympics on Twitter, which is another experience.
It's another experience, yeah.
It's like the highlights and everyone's commentary. And one of the things he mentioned, which I just find to be funny, because the world is funny, how, I don't know the specifics, but, like, Russia, like, was not going to be in the Olympics because of doping, and then they got let into the Olympics, and then they wore shirts like, I don't dope, and then they got caught doping.
Yeah.
And then Russia hacked the Olympics and blamed it on North Korea.
A lot of controversy, right?
What did you say?
It's a lot of controversy.
Yes, and I say that all to say, you know, and this brought up a conversation at my job. I was like, man, I don't want people doping for the Olympics, because the Olympics is supposed to be like your best of your natural abilities, right? That's what I thought. I thought it was
good,
something noble.
A very good documentary to watch. A very good documentary to watch is Bigger, Faster, Stronger. Highly recommend a documentary, and it deals with doping, right? And let me rephrase that. Performance enhancement. Everybody uses performance enhancement. And I think, I wish more people would come out and say that. There was a time when we did, but people use performance enhancements all the time, whether it's steroids, whether it's techniques, whether it's, their performance enhancements.
Everybody Do techniques count
if,
as?
Yes, because, like, for example, because it enhances your performance. See, that's the thing, it enhances your performance. So this is what a lot of cyclists do, right? They'll train in the mountains. Because there's less air up there, right? It increases your nitrogen in your body. So when you get ready to compete, and you compete, you have more nitrogen to burn. So it actually makes you go longer. MMA fighters do it. Everybody, that's a performance enhancer.
But that's fine.
Right?
Like, it's not something
But it's still a performance enhancement. Because, say, for example, I live in an area that's below seawater.
Right.
Then I don't have that advantage. I got to pay to go to train in the mountain. Right? I got to do that. But that's a performance enhancement. And people use performance enhancements all the time. You know?
Yeah.
They do it. It's an advantage, is it not? It's an advantage.
But training is an advantage. I think, you know, you got to have some sort of line between, like, a pharmaceutical advantage versus, like, training advantage.
And I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that everybody does it. You know, all I'm saying is everybody does it. And I would feel better if everybody just said, this is how I get down. This is what I do. Because let me tell you something. You know, being an athlete, you see it all the time. You see people use performance enhancement drugs all the time. All the time. Also, when somebody says to me, I don't do that stuff, I look at them funny. Because I was shocked. I was very shocked. You know, and I run into people all the time. You know, I have students all the time. They're like, yeah, I use roids. I use this. I use that. Like, and I'm like, wow, I didn't know. Like, so it's just more and more people use it. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that we should be transparent. Everybody should be transparent. You know, if you play football and you get your body beat like that, you need some kind of drug to keep the pain from going away, There's no way the human body could take that much pain and assault like that. For the season, you're doing it every day because you're going to practice every day, right?
Uh-huh.
90% of those guys, 90% of those guys take steroids. No doubt in my mind.
Even if they're open, are you saying be open because it's happening no matter what, that just because there's a rule that people are going to break the rule, so might as well everyone come out and open about it?
Be transparent. All I'm saying is be transparent, because I kind of feel like, I'm not saying that there's no athletes that do things natural out there. There's plenty of athletes that do everything natural, right? But I just kind of feel like it's a disadvantage if the guy that I'm running against has all this stuff and I don't. That's a disadvantage.
But what if you don't want to? Like, what if, like, I feel like if it's transparent and it's, like, an open thing and there's no, like, limitations to what you're allowed to do, then it's just going to breed this, like, overexertion in, you know, chemically, and people are just going to, like, blow themselves up, like, overdo it and just, like, ruin themselves.
I don't know if that's going to happen. I just feel like, I'm telling you, I just feel like everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it. And this idea that I'm not doing it, I'm not, then we find out later on that they were doing it. You're like, well, I thought you wasn't doping. It's like every professional athlete who, like, exceeds every human standard. We always come back and want to learn that they were taking steroids. And this is like, and I'm like,
all right, then I'm
going to
ask you another question. With that logic, I mean, I've found this article, right? I read it the other day where they found that there's muscle memory down to the DNA level. So if you are doing specialized training or doping at any point in your life, even if you stop in time to be clean for all your competitions or you decide to never do it again, you'll always have that memory and advantage at a DNA level versus someone else who never did. So now that science has discovered that, no matter what, if you have this advantage because of what you've done to train to this level or get to this level at a muscular level, even down to your DNA, someone else, you know, who hasn't done that just cannot compete on the same level. So knowing
I could definitely believe that.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
And I think people kind of knew it, but there wasn't the technology to prove it. You know, like someone says, I don't do it anymore, you know, but it's like they still, it's just like it's never fair if someone else has never done it. You know, like someone who did steroids and got super buff and stopped doing steroids and they're still way more buffer than someone else who never did it, you know?
That is true. That is true, and I think the best example I can give is Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, like, he broke records when he was a bodybuilder, but even after he stopped using steroids, he was still, like, huger than most, you know?
Yeah.
He was still huge, so, like, you see that. Now it's all turned to flat, but he's still big. He's still a big dude, you know? He puts
his suit
on.
Because they're saying with this knowledge.
I've seen him in person. Yeah, I've seen him in person, and this is like, man, he's still a big dude.
He's huge. And they're saying knowing this, it makes short-term bans not, like, good enough. Like, what's the point of having a short-term ban if, you know, these effects are lifelong? So what was I saying? This article I found.
The only thing I'm going to say about that, speaking as an athlete, right, speaking as someone who does capoeira, there are some things that, like, I did when I was younger that I had to relearn. Like, I hadn't done them in a while. Like, for example, 1990. Like, I learned how to do my 1990. It was just do a handstand and just spin on one hand, right? Like, when I was young, I used to be able to do it. Then I stopped doing it for, like, 20 years. And I'm relearning it. And it's not that I'm relearning it. It's just that My muscles know how to do it. It's just that now that I'm older and a little bit slower, the message is not getting there. I'm going to get it eventually, but the message is not getting there. So that's what that is. So you can still be someone who can throw a 98. You know, your arm is used to throwing balls at 88 miles an hour, right, as a pitcher.
Right.
You know, at a certain point, you won't be able to do that. You can still throw it, but you won't be able to do it at 88 miles because your muscles have gotten older, your tendons have gotten older, and that's
right.
So that's the only difference that I want to point out. So
yeah, it's like you know how to do it, but your body physically just can't do it any longer.
Can't do it anymore,
because you know the joints having all like everything limber, like that's everything still has to work. But yeah, you definitely, and I think we know that, right? People always say that when you're dancing, you have to practice and practice till you have muscle memory. And even if you like stop, often you will pick up on it much faster again than someone else who's never done it. And I guess it just goes down to the very being of who we are. There's another reason why kids should get into sports while they're young. I was telling my daughter, like, I'm going to make her do track. And she's like, I don't want to do track. I was like, I want you to do track so that, like, when you grow up, your body still is, like, has that lean muscle memory. And, like, it'll be a benefit, even if you don't become a track star. But, like, spending your youth training and track will, like, serve you the rest of your life. So
It has. I ran track in high school, and it serves me well, even to this day at 45.
Exactly. I wish I had. So,
yeah, so
I was like,
I'm so pushy.
So pushy.
You know,
I'm like,
because they teach you how to run at a certain pace. The teachers, the track coaches stay on you at finding the rhythm and the pace that you can move quickly but efficiently. And I don't think I would have gotten that if I just never went to track. So, like, I have my pace. Everybody has a pace when they run. I have a pace that I can maintain that makes me move fast, but I'm not burning myself out. So, same thing with swimming. I was on the swim team. Same thing. They teach you how to find that pace where you're going fast, but not too fast when you wear yourself out, but fast enough for you to keep it going.
See, one day, maybe one day, we'll never, it's not too late, even at 30-something, right?
It's never too late.
I'm like, it all matters.
I started Capoeira at 27.
Oh, good. See?
So I started, never too late. No, I take that back. I think it was 29. I started at 29, so it was never too late.
That's awesome. Yep. We have a Capoeira instructor around here. I've been, like, procrastinating, but I'm like, I really want to go take a class because
well, see,
I love
California. What's his name?
I don't know.
Is Love, last name Love? Okay, because my boy moved to California, and he teaches out there. He teaches from Mestre Amen. But California is like the Capoeira capital of the United States.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have, like, so many schools. You know, you have, like, you know, Mestre Amen is out there. Mestre Acojon is out. Like, you have all, like, the big, well-known Mestres out there on that side. So, you know, Mestre Boneco is out there. Like, my school is out there. But I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people that teach in California. So that's what I was asking, but I don't know what you love. It's Capoeira.
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to look.
That's good to know.
Good to know. Well, that's awesome. I was I really like it because of the whole martial arts with music. I like that combo. And I like that it's like ageless. I love doing things that are ageless. Like you can do this forever, you know.
You can. And I think that's what all martial arts do. You could do martial arts until your last day. Like, you can. That's one thing about martial arts that I saw. I always tell people to do martial arts over sports in a heartbeat, because sports has an expiration date.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you can't no longer compete, and you know, can no longer, you know, but you do it because you compete. At a certain point, you can't no longer compete. Whereas with martial arts, you can continue doing it until the day you die. You could always start up a new martial art whenever. So, you know, that's something I always recommend to people. It's a good investment in yourself. So, I'm a Capoeira evangelical. Like, I'm a Capoeira, but I'm like, just find a martial art that you like, that fits you, your routine, your work schedule, your body. Like, you have to find that. And then once you find that, you will always do it. So.
That's true.
So, yep.
I highly
recommend it.
Go do Capoeira, you guys. I highly recommend it as well. It's entertaining. It's fun to do. It's beautiful. It's powerful. And there's different styles. Like, I always thought of it as the dancing style, but then there's, like, the more combative style as well. So it's really awesome.
Most schools in the United States teach what's called contemporánea capoeira or contemporary capoeira. It's less martial and it's more acrobatic. But like you said, it's different styles that are, you know, more martial and less acrobatic. They're more slower. They're like, so different schools teach different things, but most schools in the United States teach what's called contemporánea capoeira. And it's more, like I said, it's more acrobatic and less martial. So I had an opportunity to learn what's called santista capoeira, which is way more martial and less acrobatic. So that was, you know, the school that I'm in now, Grupo Brasil, shout out to Grupo Brasil. Shout out to my man Akira Bravo, who's in Burbank, who's doing the Bananera challenge. So we're doing that challenge. But they teach contemporánea, you know, and so that's a big difference. So I will say this with Capoeira, with Julie and Capoeira, is that for you to get promoted in Capoeira, you have to learn the music, you have to learn the culture, you have to learn the history. So it's one of those things there that has more than one component, you know.
I like that.
I love it. So it's like, if there are days when I just come into my classroom and I say, you know what, guys, we're just going to do music all day. And we'll just music all day. And there are days when I come in, I say, you know what, we're going to do acrobatics today. We'll do acrobatics. And the days when I'm like, you know, we're going to do fight, we call it lucha. We're going to do lucha today. So, and it's just like, you know, if you're hurt, you can always come in and do music. You know,
yeah,
I'd be like, hey,
true.
You're hurt. Well, you know, grab an instrument. Let me get you to, you know, you got to learn, you have to learn Portuguese. So it kind of like really forces you to learn all these new things.
Uh-huh.
And it's an experience. And then on top of that, it's a community. It's a community. So it's like, you could know, I know people all over the world because of Capoeira. And I know that if I go to any one of those cities, I got a place to stay. Right? And it's like, and it's just exactly how it is. It's literally a community. And that's one of the things that I loved about it. And I really try to introduce my other students to it because I want them to have that sense of community. And that's what draws me to it. And, you know, Capoeiristas, if you have a chance to party with us, please party with us because we turn up. We turn up. So.
Well, you don't got to tell me twice. I love the party.
Oh, yeah. But I need to love.
You should tell everyone just a brief, like, what is Capoeira, just in case someone's listening and they don't know what that is.
Capoeira is an African Brazilian martial art. Some say it started about 500 years ago in Brazil. A lot of slaves from the middle part of Africa and the western part of Africa were brought to Brazil, and then a lot of them had Capoeira, and they escaped. They used it to fight against the oppressor. So it's basic. That's why all the songs are Portuguese, because it was in Brazil. So it's mostly kicking. They do mostly kicking. But we also have headbutting. We also have, you know, we do have strikes, like elbow strikes and stuff like that. And we have a lot of takedowns. A lot of people don't know that. But it infuses music and dance and acrobatics in it as well. So you'll see a lot of us always singing and playing music or doing it to music. So it incorporates all that stuff. So even if you get a chance to just watch it, this is great. So it's just an amazing thing. As a matter of fact, Maurice Crump was the one that actually trained Chadwick Boseman for the role of Black Panther, and he taught him Capoeira. So some of the fight scenes you see in the movie that T'Challa does is Capoeira. So I thought that was just, that was dope. And shout out to my boy Malandro, who's out in Oakland. He was in the movie as well with the Jabari tribe. So he was in it. So shout out to him. I didn't even know he was in it until after the fact. So, yep. And another tip, my first Capoeira instructor, who's in L.A., Ligier, he actually was Jaden Smith's stunt double in After Earth. There's that.
That's that. And you mentioned something that I thought was super dope. Beyond, I didn't know they had Capoeira in Black Panther. I'm like, when I rewatch it, I'm going to look out for that. But you also mentioned the whole pain in music. And I have to throw in one last, like, science article. I was reading about how a recent study has found a combination of, like, exercise and music helps us feel less pain. And to me, it's like, when I read science, like, sometimes there's innovation. I'm like, whoa, wow. But a lot of times it's like it's just further validation for things that we observe but didn't, like, categorize, you know? Because I feel like we've all, or at least I've experienced that ability to do much more physically when I'm listening to music and I'm in my zone than otherwise, you know?
And Capoeira is a wonderful demonstration of that. Oh, my God. If the music is, if the people that are singing and the instrumentation is there, like when the music is great, everybody plays exponentially better. Like, literally, you do stuff that you're like, I didn't know I could do that, right?
Right.
And then, you know, and it's funny because you can go into the hall, and you can be in the hall all day, but you don't feel it until afterwards. You're like,
yep,
oh, God,
you don't feel tired.
You know, exactly. And then in my class, what I do in my class is when we do movements together, I make my students sing the song while they're doing the movements. For two reasons. It makes them forget about the pain and the exhaustion, but also it helps them remember the songs. So,
it does.
And, you know, because they always ask me that, because I got that from another method. He's like, they used to make us sing. And I'm like, nobody's ever made us sing while we did our movements. And they're like, oh, because it makes you forget the pain and the exhaustion. And I was like, it also keeps you breathing.
So, a lot of times.
We hold our breath. We hold our breath and we do certain movements. When we walk up the steps, we hold our breath. Right?
Hmm.
And that's always so windy when you get to the top of the steps. So that's why I always tell people, make sure you're breathing as you walk up the steps. So singing forces you to breathe while you're working. So, yep.
Yep, I can see that. When I was sick with my MS and I couldn't, like, move, I still, like, danced and stuff. I would just dance a little bit, and it was in severe pain, but it really, like, helps. You're just able to do so much more when you've got music and you're moving at the same time. My sister, she's has epilepsy, and whenever she has a seizure, she's out of it. And then we turn on, like, funk music, and we, like, start dancing, and it, like, brings her out, like, of her her seizure. So we use it a lot. And it's just amazing what music does. Yeah.
So, yeah, for capoeira, you will be singing. If you take capoeira, they're going to make you sing, just to let you know that. So if you don't think you can sing, you're going to learn how to sing in capoeira. Yep. And you're going to know how to play instruments while you're singing. So, yep.
I'm sold. There's a class on Friday nights. I'm like, I can go to this. I'm going to do it. Okay, you guys, I'm going to do it. What's next?
I'm going to hold you to it.
Not this Friday. Okay. Friday after I get paid is not a birthday Friday. So I'll let you guys know, but soon.
But you know what? Look around. Because like I said, California has a lot of capoeira. I would look around because some of them have free introductory classes.
See?
You know? So, like, I know, like, my boy in Burbank, his first week is free. Like, if you come in, your first week is free. I could allow him, and I could send you his information. But I know that a lot of people do free classes, introductory classes, you know. So I would check first. I'll do a little bit more research.
I did research. Where I live, it's like there's not that many Black people. And so it's hard to find things where I live. I live North County, San Diego. So I found, like, this one crew, or it's like they teach African dance and they also do capoeira. Mm-hmm. And I just haven't found anyone else. They do it in San Diego, but that's like an hour south of where I live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, San Diego has it, but where I live, it's like,
it.
Yeah, I was like, there's one teacher who has the whole market of where I live. But I've seen good things about it. But I wanted to say I really, really enjoyed our conversation, but I should let you go so that you can enjoy your Sunday as well.
Stephanie, I know this is everybody out there. Privy to this interview, we had a conversation. You're good. And I actually specifically told you that my new promotion gives me Sundays off. Before, I had to be at work at 5:00, and I also had to do my lesson plan. I don't have to do that anymore. So
now you got
whatever you want to do. But I had a wonderful weekend. Everybody's tired. I'm the only one that's not tired. Everybody's worn out. So when you told me 3:00, we've been trying to do this for a while, and I said yes, let me do it. So if you want to end, I don't have a problem with it, but I'm good.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to end, but I work too dang much. I work almost every weekend. And when I say work, I mean I'm a lazy worker, so I do one thing. But it takes me all weekend to do, like, editing, and then I work on my website. Okay, you guys. I don't know.
I do think I love the fact that you brought in this, science stuff. And some of the things that I incorporate in my class and what I've seen in other classes. Again, we didn't have the science to back it up, but now we do.
I'll share the article.
Those are just some practices that those are just some practices that I did that I watched other people do that I started putting in my class, and it just helps. Like, here's another example. Like, I know, like, there was a time when we would stretch first and then train, but then we learned that it's best to warm up first, then stretch, and then train. So, so I used to have my students. I know one of my old instructors used to have us playing tag. We used to play tag and get warmed up.
That's cute.
Sometimes I'll start my class off with tag, or we would do sprints. And then, like, I remember when I taught at a prison one time. I taught reading at a prison, and I remember, like, some of my students had difficulties when we started writing, they had difficulty starting. So I taught them how to write haikus, and they kind of like got their brains warmed up so they could start writing their assignments. So
You're a good teacher.
I still use to this day. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I start using that now all the time with my students. I say, hey, you know, if you have trouble thinking of something, just write. So let's write a haiku together. I'm going to write a haiku together first, and then I let them go on their own, and soon enough, they're done with their assignments. So it's kind of like warming up the brain.
That's awesome. I need some of that on a regular basis, some of that warming up the brain.
There's so many ways to do it.
For me, dancing really helps. It's like one of the only things that makes me happy. Like when I,
that's good.
As a
mood changer.
I've seen
your dance videos. Yeah,
I don't post them that much.
Yeah.
But I do this all day at home. I try to dance. Sometimes I forget. Then I feel like, and then I dance, and I'm like, oh, yay. I feel like I'm not old.
And you know what? I recommend that for people that want to start, like, working out. I talk about this on my podcast all the time. Dancing is a good way to exercise, you know. And I know people that, like, were trying to find something to do. They weren't gym junkies. They weren't gym rats or whatever you call it. And they started dancing. They joined the class, and then they went out twice a week to dance with that class, and it kept them in shape. And it's just, I think dancing is a good way to stay in shape. So I always tell people, I dance all the time. So I tell people, you know, the way I stay in shape is that I dance all the time, all the time. So even if I do a little dance in the morning or whatever, I'm dancing all the time. So I highly recommend people doing that because it's fun, and it doesn't feel like work, you know.
Right.
It doesn't feel like you were in the gym pushing all those weights. It really is fun, and so it's really good for your heart as well. So I always tell people, like, take up a dance, like, learn a new dance, and then do it. It's always fun. You get to meet new people and stuff like that. So I highly recommend that as well.
Yeah, make you social,
yeah.
You know, the get out. And what else I like about dancing, it's just, like, it's just part of, like, being comfortable with your body and just
mm-hmm.
keeping it moving. You know, because if you feel like you have to move in a certain way, under a certain rhythm, under a certain setting, it's like, when will you move then? You know, you're like, I can only run, or I can only, you know, like, I can only dance if I'm good, or like these limitations, like, just let them go and move around. Sometimes I'll just, like, jump up and down, like, they call it pyro something when you, like, exercise by jumping and doing, like...
You're jumping around, yeah, I forgot what it's called, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I forget what
there's
it's called, too.
There's this guy named, there's this guy who I have a love-hate relationship with, Ivo Portal.
Uh-huh.
And he talks about movement a lot, and everybody should check him out. He's really dope. I just feel like he's very classist, but he does a lot of stuff with movement. Like, his stuff is not – the work that he does, you know, it's amazing. But he talks about movement and finding movements. Yeah, so you go to his class, he does all these different crazy things that you can do. Not only to stay in shape, but to keep your flexibility and everything. And real interesting things that he does. Some of them I've incorporated in my class, and some of the stuff I've talked about in the class. So, so he's really dope. So he talks about that a lot as well.
Wait,
his name is Ido Portal. It's IDO and then Portal, PORTAL. He used to be a capoeirista too, so that's why that's where that connection comes in. So highly recommended movement, dance. You know, anything. You know, find something that you like, right? Find something
right.
that you like first of all. I talk about it on my podcast all the time. Find something that you like and then do it because it won't feel like work. And dancing is probably number one on that.
And also, know what else I did recently? And I was like, why did I stop doing this? Sit-ups. And I was like, sit-ups. Like, I stopped doing sit-ups because I didn't have a six-pack. And somehow I got it in my head, like, you have to have, like, physical, like, you should be able to see your results, you know, based on, you know, doing the sit-ups. So I felt like it was, like, no point. I'm like, oh, I'll just do planks and other things like that. And then I
mm-hmm.
finally, I'm back to sit-ups because I'm like, you know what? I will never have a six-pack. And guess what? I don't care.
What?
It would be great to be able to do 100, 200 sit-ups in a setting, be strong, you know, like limber. Like, you want to just stay limber, you know?
Three things about that. Number one, plaques don't actually help. They don't help. Like, they just came out with a study saying that plaques don't really do anything. Number two, genetically, most of us will not have apex. Most of us will not have apex genetically. Everybody that I know that has apex is in the gym 3 to 4 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the people that they have, because they be in the gym 3 to 4 hours a day that they do that. Number three, you should do sit-ups and crunches, because the reason why most Americans have back pains is because we don't use our core. You're supposed to be using your core when you lift, when you move stuff, when you move around. Everything should be in your core, everything. If your core is great, everything else will be easy. So you should do sit-ups to strengthen up your abs, or crunches, or reverse crunches, or bicycles. You should do that. Every time you exercise, everything you do, you should focus on your core. And that's why everybody has back problems. We're supposed to be using our core when we move stuff. All our strength should be coming from there. And that's why. But, yeah, everybody's not going to have APAC. That's just, when people come to me and they say, I want to look like this, I'll be like, get out of my face. You know, genetically, you're not supposed to happen. It's a good goal, but really, ultimately, you have abs. Woo, you know, like, really.
Yeah, be strong. You know? Like,
yeah, so, yep.
That's what I like about social media and stuff, is you'll see it just, like, gets rid of any, like, stereotypes you may have. It doesn't take much to be, like, if you want to look outside of that stereotype, it's, like, easy. Like, you could find, like, an example. Oh, this person doesn't live by that. That person doesn't look like that. Like, you know, and it's, like, it's hard to hold on to any stereotype. And that's why I love seeing, like, bigger people, like, kill it when they're dancing or doing anything that's, like, super, you know, athletic or flexible. Because then you're like, yeah. You're like, wow, oh, yeah. People, just because how you look doesn't determine what your body is going to be able to do.
Exactly.
You know?
I learned that in Capoeira every day. People come in and you assume they can't do certain things, and they can do them. And the human body is amazing. The human body can do certain things that superhuman. Like, it's superhuman. Like, that's why I like watching new people find new things to do with their bodies. It's just like, wow. But, yes, you can do whatever you want to do. You can do. There are capoeiristas that have no legs. There are capoeiristas that have one leg. There are capoeiristas that have one arm, you know, and they play very well. So I'm like, you can do it. Like, it can be done. And you don't have to have a particular body type. People tell me that all the time, well, I'm not flexible enough. Well, you can come to class and you will become eventually flexible enough. But I don't expect you to come at the door with a particular skill set in athleticism to do capoeira. Just come through. We got you, you know. So, yeah.
Exactly. Be humble, right?
But I will say this, though. And I'm not trying to be sexist. And it's actually very, it just bothers me that in capoeira, we have women that I noticed that they're all built the same. I know of one woman who does capoeira who's not built like this. She's actually in California. She's actually at our LA studio.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only one that's a plus size. And a lot of it is because we spend 40% of our time upside down. So I get that. Like, yeah, you spend about 40% of your time upside down. That's why you don't wear shorts. We're not trying to see all that. So, you're going to spend about 40% of your time upside down. And for women that, you know, are more well endowed than others, that might be a problem. So, you know.
They have really good bras. I can recommend.
Yeah.
I have a bra that I can go upside down in. I am so excited about it.
Yeah,
I will share it in a link.
You can send me that information, because I have people that come, and because the thing is, when they see other women capoeiristas, they're like, oh, I want to be built like that. And it's like, no, don't come into capoeira for that. Come into capoeira for the community and for the fun and for the dancing and the music and, you know, the fighting. Like, come for that. Don't come in here expecting to look a particular way. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then, so I want to be able to say, then I have people come and say, I can't be outside now, baby. And I'm like, and I don't know what to, I don't know what to tell them. So if you can give me that information, I'll definitely be like, well, you can use this. Not saying anything, but you can use this, you know, so.
Oh, yeah, I can definitely, no problem. I found a bra. It's from this brand called Panache, and it wasn't, it was the most expensive bra I ever got, but it was still not killer. It was like $80, but it lasts for a long time, and I'm not saying I have huge boobs, but big, maybe huge boobs can go upside down in it. So I will definitely send you the link.
But if you look at the women in Capoeira, they have, they're small.
Yeah.
All, I'm telling you, they're all built the same way. I can tell you, go online. They're all built. They're literally like, it's like they come out of a factory. You know, men, we have all shapes and sizes, but women are just some, and I understand.
Probably for the reason you said. I mean, if you got to be upside down all the time and you're going to fall out of your bra, you're definitely not going to want to do it. You know,
exactly.
I know that definitely hurt me growing up. I used to be a runner, and then when I got asthma, and then I got boobs, and I was just like, no, this is too hard. Like, because having a properly fitting bra will, like, make or break whether a girl does any athletics.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that's something that I really want to change. I want more women in Capoeira, because there's very few. And, you know, on top of the sexism and the harassment and stuff, because that happens too. But, you know, like, I want more women to come, and I want to be able to, I want my class to be a safe space for that. You know, and I want to be able to say, well, just use this. This should be able to help, you know.
Yeah, I will definitely share the love. I will put that in the show links, and I'll send it to you too. And on that note, you guys, you got a bra tip, you got, you know what comic books you need to buy, you know what sports you need to try. we had a really good show.
Yeah, we got the science to back it up, so yeah.
Yeah, I cite everything in the show notes, so we definitely do. You did give me an awesome drop for the intro to the show, so you don't have to do that, but is there a song you'd like me to play for your show?
Yes.
I'm down to one song now.
Okay. In the Black Panther soundtrack, there's a song called All the Stars by Kendrick Lamar and SZA. I love that song. And it comes into the end credit scene of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You can play that song. That song is amazing. The video is gorgeous. Like, if you can do that song, I'll be happy. It'll be appropriate for this episode.
I will definitely do that. And where can everyone find you?
You can hit me on the Twitters, of course. I'm always on Twitter, at Dantresomi, that's DanTresomi, or you can just go to Instagram, I'm Brother Omi on there, and that's spelled Brother, and then Omi is O, M is in Mary, I is in Indiana. You can find me there. YouTube as well, if you just put in Dantresomi, you'll find my channel there. Or you can just hit me up on the email, if you still use it, and it's Dantresomi@gmail.com. If you just punch in Dantresomi on Google, all my stuff will come up. All my writings and all my stuff will come up right there. So I don't have a website yet, but I'm working on that as we speak. And but you can always find me on Twitter. You can always see me running my mouth on Twitter. So definitely catch me geeking out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This was a nice, fun show. So I appreciate
you. I appreciate you. Definitely. And whenever you want to help, have me come back on, let me know what's up. And if you ever need me to do another drop, you know I got you. So.
Awesome. Well, you have a good Sunday, and I'll talk to you soon.
You too. Peace.
All right. Bye-bye.
Is it anything and everything you offer? I do. podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.